Hey, Miles.
How are you doing, too?
It's like last semester.
Huh?
Like last semester.
Yeah.
So I first want to explain why there was a bit of a break. So I actually wrote a book, which is now being edited, on the Shiurim. So over the course of last spring semester, and during the summer, I was working feverishly to finish the book. Which is a collection of chapters based on the shiurim I've given here. And I kind of needed a break just to clear my brain after getting the book out. Now I'm working on volume 2. And these are all, you know, based on some of the shiurim I've been giving here. It's being published by Koren Press, Magid Books in Israel. And so I'm grateful to you for giving me the opportunity to continue to not only think about these things, but also produce books, which is always a good thing to do. Thank you. It's very exciting. So you will be able to say, of course, I thank students at Lander College for Men in the preface, and you will be able to say, if you're interested at all, I was at that year, or maybe not. I mean, the book has like, I think, 8 chapters, and I've given dozens of shiurim here, so it's kind of part of it. Anyway, that's as far as the break. Hopefully we'll continue on a somewhat more regular basis now. Today's shiur is I think it's a pretty famous Agadata. One measure of it is that I mentioned to my wife what I was doing. She said, "Oh, I know that one." I think maybe more women know it than men. I'm not sure, but you will tell me how widely known it is to you. The Agadata is Chaf Dalet Amud Beis. There are 2 sides. So start Chaf Dalet Amud Beis. It's double xeroxed, and then goes to Chaf Hei Amud Aleph. The Agadata is about Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa. I'm sure many of you heard of him. Yes? No? Right? So Rabbi Hanina Mendoza was one of the great tzaddikim, lived around the time of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and really one of the amazing tzaddikim, a miracle worker, incredible mispalel, person of great, great chassidus. In some ways, a little similar to Choni HaMa'agil, although they lived at different times. But it's a great, great, great tzaddik. In fact, the Gemara in Brachas Daf Lamed Beis, just by way of preface, says that Hanina ben Dosa came to learn under Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, a great towering Talmud Chacham of his era. And shortly thereafter, apparently, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's child became ill. And so Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai asked Hanina ben Dosa to daven for him. So he did. It says he put his head between his knees, and he davened, and then the child became healed. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was married. We have a few married guys here. You're married? Okay. So his wife came over to him and said, "No, what about you? Like, you're not a big enough tzaddik to daven. You have to ask Rabbi, you know, Hanina ben Dosa. You're the Rosh Yeshiva. He's this new person in the yeshiva, and you ask him to daven for you?" So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, quite forcefully, "I could have stuck my head between my knees all day and it wouldn't have made a difference. Because Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa is like an Eved Lifnei Rabbo, and I am like a Sar Lifnei Rabbo. I'm a minister in the king's court." Now, how often does a cabinet minister see the prime minister in comparison to the guy who cleans his room every day? The guy who cleans his room every day is there all the time. Whereas the minister, he makes an appointment, the secretaries make an appointment once every 3 weeks, whatever it is. So there's a difference in intimacy. And that's why Rashi understands the Gemara. But it's also a different sensibility. A sar is a person of great self-esteem and power and authority and prestige, whereas an eved is like, just wants to do the job. Whatever his Rebbe tells him, he'll do it. So Rabbi Hanina Mendoza was a great, not only intimate of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as Choni HaMa'agil was, different era, but also he was an Eved. That's what he wanted out of his life. He wanted to be an Eved Lefnei Rabbah. Perhaps his most famous teaching is in Pirkei Avos, Perek Gimel. Hanina Mendoza, Omer kol shiyiras chet o kodemes chachmaso, chachmaso miskayemes. Chol shechachmaso kodemes liras cheto, ein chachmaso miskayemes. Rabbi Chanina Mendoza prioritizes Yiras Chet and Maisim over Chachma. I don't know what status they gave him in the yeshiva, Rabbi Yochanan Ben Sakai, but Yiras Chet, Maisim Tovim, Eved, that's the Dumus of Rabbi Chanina Mendoza. He was an omnipotent Mispalel, like the story in Brachas I mentioned, but the Gemara, there's a famous Mishnah in Brachas, which the Gemara is going on, where Rabbi Chanina Mendoza says that he can always tell if his tefillah is going to be answered by how fluent it is in his mouth, very famous Mishnah. It's a great, great sign. And the Gemara we're about to learn is a part of a series of Maisim, which appear in Tainus, also Maisim about him in Brachas, but most of them in Tainus. So this is embedded in that series of Maisim. That's where it appears. So the Gemara starts, bottom of Chaf Dalad, Amud Beis. Everybody with me? See where it's marked? I don't have any more. Can you share with somebody? Sorry. I never know how many guys are going to show up. If I bring too many, then I feel bad if only a few guys show up. So this way I didn't have to feel so bad. Self-protect. So anyway, if you wouldn't mind sharing. So the Gemara says as follows, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, B'chol yom v'yom las kol yotzeis v'omeres, kol ha'olam kulo nizon b'shvil chanina b'ni. A bas kol comes out on a daily basis and proclaims that the entire world is sustained on account of chanina b'ni, chanina my son. B'chanina b'ni, but chanina my son, dayo b'kav charuvim me'erev Shabbos l'erev Shabbos. All he needs to survive is a kav of charuvim, caribs, for the entire week. So how do you understand this? You know, at one level, I mean, he's a person who had minimal to virtually non-existent material needs. All he needed was kav charuvim, and that was fine. That's all he needed. Is there any relation? There's an irony here, isn't there? The whole world is sustained because of Chanina Mendoza, but all he needs is Kav Charuv. So it's an irony. That's what the Bas Kol is saying. The question is, do you think there's any causality between the two? Do you think that the reason that Kol Ha'olam Kulo is Nizam Bishvil Chanina Mendoza is precisely because Chanina Mendoza only requires a Kav Charuv? Is it just a matter of happenstance, or is there some deeper link between the two? What do you think?
There's enough food for everybody else because he's only eating carrots.
Right. Yes. Otherwise, you would have had a big appetite. Now, what do you think? You think there's some deeper connection between the two, or is the Gemara just sort of noting an odd, ironic coincidence?
The Yukadim Bini sounds like it's something separate. I'm not sure if that's necessary.
Well, clearly, the Bas Kol is speaking to the intimacy, which I mentioned earlier, between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Chanina Mendoza. He's Ben. The Gemara there calls him an Eved, who's, as Rashi explains, always in the house, always around. So here it's a Ben, both expressions of intimacy. Do you think that there's any Carl?
It's, even though he has like the merit of providing the whole world with all this, with whatever.
But that's not causal. Even though it's not causality. So I'm asking you whether there's causality. I think there probably is, if you were to ask me, because probably what the Gemara, or the Bas Kol is saying, is that Chanina Mendoza was such a tzaddik that he didn't need any food, and b'schus his tzidkus, the entire world is sustained. In other words, the whole world is worth it. Humankind is a worthwhile divine creation, merely by virtue of the fact that humankind could produce a man like Chanina Mendoza, who is so remarkable. So it's causal. Do you see what I'm saying? He's such a great tzaddik. All he need, and why is eating so little a mark of his tzidkus? And that's really going to be one of the main themes of this Agadita. I called it Piety and Poverty. It alliterated. I couldn't resist it. But there is this connection between his piety, his tzidkus, and also his poverty, which we're going to try to explore. And actually we're going to explore, as we'll see, the Agadita really shifts the theme from Chanina Mendoza. I would argue he's not even the main protagonist in this Agadita. But why do you think it's the case? If there's this causality, do you have any deeper understanding of why you think it might be the case that he needs so little and therefore the world is misparnes as a result of him? Yes. And then Miles.
Yeah, I just think that there's perhaps a relationship between the fact that he's mistabek, the muak, I mean, get by with very little, and most people, I guess, in general, they eat more than they need to.
Yeah, so, certainly in 21st century, the United States of America. How many bagels are you guys having this morning?
So,
as many as Landers gives us.
As many as Miles, knowing you, it's probably right. Yes.
State,
Republic, right? Oh, yeah, right. Very good. I was in my class lesson, Mr. Greg. Very good point. Okay, I'll come back to that. Good.
So I don't know if the Gemara is suggesting that the dose is teaching us a lesson of Mistabek Mua, and therefore, like, really anybody with the same mindset can really be Nizon, even though he might think he's hungry. He's really not hungry. He actually has everything he needs.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think that's crucial. I think it's well said and a crucial point. Let me just elaborate on that, and I'll be happy to tell you. Miles wanted to say something, and I'll take your comment. Wait, hang on. Let me just finish. Let me just elaborate on that point. I think the key thing that we need to understand about Chanina ben Dosa... Well, let me preface that by asking you a question. Why didn't Chanina ben Dosa ever daven for... As we'll see, he lived in abject poverty. Why didn't he ever daven for more food? Like, he's a Baal Nesh en Kamo. I mean, he's a great miracle worker, as we see time and time again. So why did he... need to live on Kav Haruvin? Like, why didn't he just say, Akadosh Baruch Hu, could you give me like a bagel in the morning? You know, take away one from Lander guys and bring one over to me. Like, why didn't daven for that? And by the way, he's got a wife, and she's the key sufferer here. So why doesn't he daven for it? How would you understand the ruchnius, the spirituality, the value system of somebody who doesn't even want more, although he could get it because he's such a credible Baal Nes? I think the answer probably is that he simply didn't care. Food wasn't important to him. You know, amongst yourselves, by the way, there are some people who are real foodies, right? Like, and there's some people who really don't care very much. I will mention my wife. I hope she doesn't listen to this tape. She's a wonderful cook, and she takes care of me wonderfully. But she herself, like, she's happy with, like, peanut butter and whole wheat matzo sandwich every day for lunch. Like, that's all. No jelly, let alone. Like, I would drive me crazy. But, like, it's not important to her. It's, like, not her thing. I mean, I guess there's some things she likes. There's some people for whom food is simply not important. And there are some people, the reason food is not important to them is because all they care about is being Eved LaKadosh Baruch. If your whole life revolves around a single goal, I want to be close to Hashem. That's what you want to do. And by the way, it wasn't primarily or fundamentally through learning, although I'm sure he was a Talmud Chacham, he learned by Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, but it was through his Maisim Tovim, it was through his Yiras Chet, his Tefillah. That's all he wanted. If that's what he wanted, then food wasn't important to him. He just didn't care about it so much. Like, you know, I can manage with a Kafka Reuven, who cares? And so that explains at a deeper level, to my mind, why the whole world is Nizon as a result of Chanina ben Dosa. Because here's a human being, part of Hashem's creation, who all he wants in life is to be close to Hashem. Maisim Tovim, Yiras Chet, that's all he wants. Well, the whole world is worth it, from a Kadosh Baruch Hu's perspective, as a Bore Olam, if it could produce somebody like Chanina ben Dosa. The whole project is worthwhile. It made back in Bereishis, Hashem saw a lot of Chataim Vayinachem, and he kind of regretted having created the world. The Chanina ben Dosa, it's a little bit like Avram bargaining with stone. The number of, you know, the whole city will survive if there are just a couple of people that demonstrate that the human condition is worth it. So Chanina ben Dosa demonstrated that. Okay, there were a couple of comments, which I think Miles wanted to say something.
I was going to ask, let's see, you're explaining a little more, like, but just because he's not eating... Why specifically is that the reward for the world? Why not? No, like, I'd say, can you elaborate more on the parallel?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. And I think that the expression of his tzidkus, his chassidus, one manifestation of it, prominent manifestation, was his lacking in need for food. Food was simply wasn't important. So that... kind of, there's a certain logic to why, as a result of that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu give food to everybody else, because he makes the whole world worthwhile and he doesn't even need it, so everybody will get it. But your question is definitely worth pondering further, but to me there's a certain logic to it. Yeah.
I was pretty much asked my question. I was just wondering, like, by what virtue of his abstinence from food gave him this paschal to come and this whole focus? I feel like there were a lot of Rebbeim who had similar priorities, or so I was wondering, like, why him?
He was unique in his tzidkus in that, you know, nobody else that Gemara records on a daily basis that I can recall would lived on the Kav Karuvim on a weekly basis. By the way, does that remind you, is there any person
who...
Very good. Hashem Yochai. Excellent. Remember in the cave? He lived on... Excellent, Miles. He lived on... So, if you think about Hashem Yochai, and you think about Chanina Mendoza, what I'm hearing is that Chanina Mendoza throughout his whole life was the equivalent of Hashem Yochai in the cave. If the Gemara is thinking both, which means that just like Hashem Yochai lived in the cave, totally severed from Maisa Olam, being Osek in HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Torah and whatever he was learning in that cave, that was Hanimanus' whole life. He doesn't need a cave. His whole life, in a sense, is a cave. It's remarkable. Let me ask you the following question. Do you think that there was literally a voice that proclaimed from the heaven this teaching? That's certainly a possible interpretation. But is it the only interpretation?
But that's a question for any time.
Correct. Correct. You're absolutely correct. So do you think there's literally a voice, you know, a physical voice that, you know, you can just listen to? There may have been. I'm not saying it wasn't. But another way to understand this in many Baskols in the Gemara is that this is a teaching of the truth. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is teaching, or a Malach, or somebody is sort of conveying truth about the world. The Gemara is, in effect, capturing certain truth by articulating it in the language of a Bas Kol. It may literally have been a Bas Kol. I'm not saying it wasn't. But there are Mefarshim in various places in Shas where Bas Kol is mentioned, understand it to be a Ha'ara from a Kadosh Baruch Hu in some sense, an insight that a Kadosh Baruch Hu enabled people to see. This is the way the Rambam, but I'm almost sure would understand it, that when you see the truth about something, it's ultimately comes from Hashem. Because where does all truth come from? Hashem. So when you clue into something, you've heard Hashem's voice. It didn't need to be a physical voice with sound waves moving through the air. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu, being HaKadosh Baruch Hu, can communicate without physical voices. He can enable us to perceive the truth of things. Is that not true? Do you hear that? So the world saw... Chaim Mendoza, to put it in different terms, enabled the world to have a different vision of what sustenance is and depends upon and what tzaddikim are and are not. His very life enabled people to have that vision, that insight. And the term Bas Kol could be a metaphor for that voice from Hashem, which is to say Hashem's truth, which we sometimes azocha to hear. I'm not saying that's necessarily the case here. I'm just posing that as an alternative explanation for Bas Kol here. In other words, I'm pretty sure the Rambam would take that view. Yes?
In fact,
I'm certain the Rambam would take that view. Because the Rambam doesn't believe that Nevuah in general is our voice waves. They're all intellectual insights. This is a Rambam perspective. By the way, just as an aside, as you know, it's just an Eretz Yisrael recruiting. I had some spare time on Friday, so I went to the Israel Museum. And the Israel Museum has, if anybody gets to Israel, I could put it on your list, has an exhibit of on the Rambam. And it has the Mishneh Torah that the Rambam wrote with his own hand, because they were able to identify the handwriting in the Mishneh Torah with the Rambam's letters found in the Cairo Geniza. And there's also that very famous, you've probably all seen pictures of this, the Mishneh Torah, which has handwriting under it, Muga al Yodai, Moshe ben Maimon. So it's the Rambam's own signature that he reviewed and checked the accuracy of the manuscript. That's really a very moving thing, to see the Rambam's own hand in front of your eyes, like his own signature. So if you can get there, it's really wow, it's mind blowing. It's worth a trip to Israel just to see it. Anyway, yes.
Okay, so just to address some of the questions that were asked specifically about the Chaim Mendoza's abstinence from food, so to take this existential reality to its logical conclusion, this is a Gemara that's teaching a lesson about Muslim, and in that's the obvious theme where it says, it doesn't just say that the whole world is worth it, it says the whole world is Nizam.
Right.
Which is to say that the world has a, you know, like I suggested, the world has this better understanding of what Mazon is from Chanina Ben Dosa.
Right.
Chanina Ben Dosa,
he got it.
He got what
well, Mazon well put. Excellent. Well put. Yes, that's a better way to put it than I put it. So thank you for that. That people understood what Mazon is by observing Chanina Ben Dosa's life. So their Mazon came as a result of their observing. Thank you. Very well put. Okay, let's continue, because this is really a prelude to the story. We haven't gotten to the story yet. Just remember one thing, and this is crucial. If a man is married, then whatever he does impacts on his wife and his family. So the key question this Agadah forces us to grapple with is, what is the impact of Rabbi Chanina Mendoza's asceticism and tzidkus on his wife? Where is she in this picture? Because if he only has Kav Charuvin, what does she have?
Even less.
Kav Charuvin. Maybe they have to share the Kav Charuvin. I don't know. That's all they have.
Behind every great man is a coward.
So how do the Gemara brings us into Chanina Mendoza's life and forces us to really confront the question of what is the cost of great tzidkus on the part of one spouse on the other? It doesn't always have to be the man and the wife. It could be the wife and the man. And by the way, what is the contemporary relevance of that question? Kollel. A guy wants to, you know, person's married, sits in Kollel, and income is very, very modest, places great strains upon the family, and he's sitting and learning all day. Let's enter into the psychology and emotions and mind of a woman whose husband aspires to godless, the Torah, which she may endorse, nevertheless, it comes at a cost. That's really, I think, ultimately the theme of this Agadah. So let's continue with the Gemara. Hava regilu debisu lemichma tanura kol male deshapsa. His wife had the custom of throwing, heating up the oven every Erev Shabbos, v'shadje aktarta, and she would throw aktarta, and she would throw like incense or something that smoked and smelled good. Mishum kisufa. What's the meaning of kisufa? Anybody know?
Shame.
She was ashamed because she had nothing to cook for Shabbos. You ever walk by, you know, from house, maybe a house you can't smell, but like an apartment? What do you smell out of Shabbos? Cholin, kugel, chicken, challah. It just smells. What?
Yabchik.
Who?
Yabchik.
What's Yabchik?
It's like kugel and
no. Okay, whatever. I don't know what it is. Sounds delicious. But anybody knows, Erev Shabbos in front of a traditional household, you walk near the door and it smells like Shabbos. It smells great. Now, this poor lady, what is she going to do? Cook a pot of charuvim? Doesn't smell like Shabbos. So she was embarrassed from her neighbors that she was so impoverished. She had nothing to cook for Shabbos. So that's what used to do this every Shabbos. What does this tell you about her? That's what the Gemara says. What does it tell you about her mentality?
She cared. She wasn't happy for this one.
Yes, she was embarrassed. Now, I want to focus the question. Do you think at this point she felt that her husband did the wrong thing? In other words, how did she, what did she believe about the tzidkus of her husband? Does she object at this point to anything? No, she doesn't object to it. She was married to a great tzaddik, tzaddik hador. It nowhere says here that she objected to it. Later we'll see she made some changes. But at this point, she's all these years, this is what she did. She just put the smoke up. She didn't object to it. She didn't ask him to perform any nisim, which he was perfectly capable of. That comes later. But for all these years, she never did it. Why didn't she do it? Why didn't she do it? She was embarrassed. Why didn't she do it? If she was embarrassed from her neighbors, why didn't she ask her husband, the great Baal Nes, to do and perform a miracle and get some money? Better food. At least a cholent. At least a kugel. Something. Challah. Why didn't she ask her husband? Think about it. She's embarrassed, but she didn't ask. Yes?
Isn't this a stereo to what we just said on the other Amud? The whole world was sustained because of him. So is she an extension of him, or is she included in the rest of the world?
That's so well put. Is wife a part of husband, or is wife not a part? That's really one of the crucial questions we're going to explore here. We're trying to enter into to the best of the Agadah that enables us to do it, enter into the mind and heart of this wife of Chanina ben Dosa, who's living with this great tzaddik, and it comes at a cost. So again, let me ask you, if she was embarrassed, why didn't she ask for a nes? And why didn't she object or something? Like, she's doesn't say anything. You hear the question? Yes.
Was she embarrassed because she didn't have food, or because that she didn't want to be viewed as someone that didn't know how to cook? So, like, just with her friends.
That's an interesting question. As the story unfolds, I haven't read you the next few lines. Just setting things up, but it's because she had no food.
Okay, doesn't say right here.
Yeah, no, you're right. No, you're right. It's a good question, but as the story unfolds, it was embarrassment not having enough food. You hear the question? It's Akasha. If she's embarrassed, why doesn't she do something about it? Yes.
So just to address your question. So Rashi always says, Shehayu shekinusem opos misa l'chvod Shabbos v'hi eino osa klom. That other people, I guess, were doing things l'chvod Shabbos and she wasn't doing anything. Now, I guess what's not explicit is whether or not this kisupa is other people. What are other people going to think? Or, you know, just, like, I guess then who else is she putting up this steam for?
Yeah, it's the neighbors. I'll read you the next couple lines. I love it, since you raised it. Havala hach shivavasa bishta. She had a bad neighbor.
Don't we all?
not in the land of dorms. Amrash, she said, this bad neighbor. We need to understand what's like with this bad neighbor. Like, she's just a nasty creature or what. But anyway, she said, michtei, Yadana de Lesl Huvalomidi, I know they have zilch. My Kulehai, what's all the smoke? I know she has nothing to cook. They're impoverished. So what's all the smoke here? Ha Azla Vitarfa Abava. She went and knocked on the door. Hello, hello. Ichsefa. So the wife of Chanina Mendoza became embarrassed. V'ayla lindrona, and she went up to an inner chamber of the house so that she would hide. In effect, she hid from the neighbor. So it's pretty clear that the embarrassment here is of a neighbor. Okay, I'll stop here. The story continued with the neighbor, but I'm just reading this part of it to show you that it's pretty clear that her embarrassment is of her neighbors, and this nasty neighbor takes advantage of that and wants to, in effect, clear the smoke, if you don't mind the pun or metaphor. And she's doing this in a nasty way. So that's the embarrassment. Yes?
Just two observations. One is it's odd that her neighbor knows the situation, she's putting up the smoke anyway, and it's only causing further questioning from the neighbors. It's almost like she's...
Nasty.
Yeah, Yeah, like I'm not even talking about from the perspective of the neighbor, I'm talking about from her perspective. She's hoping to get she's hoping not to get negative attention out of this, and she's getting negative attention out of this.
Well, it could be not every neighbor is cognizant of their poverty and
so
wants to make a phone.
Could be. And the other thing, the question that the Rebbe presented, just in terms of like she's embarrassed on the one hand, but she's not doing anything about it on the other. It's almost like she kind of like agrees with Kuni Mendoza on one hand.
There we go. That's you're bringing us closer to where I want to go, which is I posed a serious question. If she's embarrassed, why doesn't she do something about it? And I think the answer is that we have some psychology majors here. Mordechai, you were a psychology major. Nobody else here a psychology major? You're, oh, he's got it. Okay, good. You're a psychology major? Okay, so one of the fundamental principles of psychology is that cognition does not march in perfect unity with emotions. Just because you think one thing, that doesn't mean that you feel the same thing as you think. It would be great if we could believe something, and as a result of that cognitive affirmation, have our emotions follow naturally. But that doesn't work that way. Can you give me an example of where you know something, but you don't feel according to what you know?
Bring a Lula to the airport. So if you're bringing a Lula to the airport and you're going to take it out and start diving at the airport and shaking around the plants.
Oh, good.
So,
yeah, so you'll be embarrassed even though...
You know the 100% this is what Hashem wants you to do.
Right.
And everyone else is looking at you.
Can you think of another example?
Yeah, what about dancing at a simcha where you know you should be feeling just complete joy, but for some reason you're not feeling that?
Okay, good. There are many things that we know we should do, but we don't feel like doing them. Now, that's separate from the gap between action and belief. That's obvious. Many, many times we believe something and don't act accordingly. Like, you know you should be up for davening exactly on time, or you should be in Seder on time. But that doesn't mean that you can force your actions to conform to your beliefs. That's one of the great challenges of our lives and of Musar and of everything else. I'm focusing on a different and more subtle point, which is that our emotions don't always follow readily upon our beliefs. That we just feel things. Very hard to command or require emotions. It's one of the kashas. V'yahavta l'reacha kamocha. How can Hashem command us to love? You can't command feelings. By the way, Miles and Mordechai, if you can, probably don't remember this, but I will remind you, Aristotle says this in the Nicomachean Ethics, that you can't command emotions. Emotions have to come. Either you feel them or you don't. So you need to put yourself in a place, maybe, where you feel those emotions, but we don't have direct control over our emotions. That's, by the way, at the core of psychology. You know, the psychotherapy is, you know, you don't have control over, you feel certain things, maybe you feel, oh, I shouldn't feel those things. You may feel guilty about feeling those things, but guess what? You feel them. And you have to confront that and work with that, because that's just the reality of your life. So what I think is happening here is that this woman, what's her name? Has no name. Let's see, your neighbor calls her Plonisa, like the female version of Plony, you know, doesn't have a name here. She married one of the greatest tzaddikim of her generation. It's hard to imagine that she didn't recognize his, which she does, she recognizes great tzaddikus, and she bought into it. It's like the Kolel wife, you know, this apocryphal Kolel wife. She marries a Kolel guy who's on, you know, an LTL. You know what that means? No? What? Long-term learner. I mean, you ever heard of that expression? There's a 5-year plan, the 10-year plan, you know, the long-term learners. So this guy is, you know, long-term, you know that from the yeshiva world. It's a long-term learner. So she buys into it. Why did she go out with somebody who is a long-term learner? I mean, that was part of the deal. So cognitively, maybe having been brainwashed in seminary or whatever, she believes that that's the exclusive ideal to which she wishes to devote her life. That's what she believes. But guess what? Our emotions don't always follow immediately upon our beliefs. She knows that. That's the life she believes in. What could be more important than supporting a husband in Torah? What's more important than time with Torah? So she knows that. But emotionally, she feels bad. And I think that's what's going on. That's why so far she hasn't... She's the wife of Chanina Mendoza. She doesn't have her own name. She lives in the orbit of Chanina Mendoza's aspirations. His aspirations are her aspirations. She doesn't articulate or express any of her own needs to him. All along, she's, you know, the smoke. What does he know? He comes in Erev Shabbos, house is smoky. Okay, like he doesn't, there's no, the guy doesn't tell us that they conversed about this, discussed it. What's going on? How are you feeling? Why is the house all full of smoke if we only have charuvim? Like nothing, no, there's no record of such a conversation. He's in his Aliyah Ruchnius universe. She is Debisu, Rebbe Chanina Mendoza. She's a part of that universe. She affirms it. She believes it. She married him because he was the great tzaddik that he was. But nevertheless, she feels ashamed. Her emotions haven't fully, fully conformed to her principles. And that's true throughout life. Yes?
Could it be that she also didn't want to detract from his comments? If she started talking to him about how she felt, there would have been that
Could be, and that could be. But the fact is, she's bought into it cognitively, but nevertheless, she feels ashamed over it. So emotions, beliefs are not identical. Now we'll see. We're getting her at one stage in her development. The Agadita, I would argue, as we'll see, traces her development and growth over time. David, I looked for that Marsha. I couldn't find it. So maybe you could, after just show it to me. I was looking for it. Okay. Anyway. So that's where we are. Now, let me ask you a question about this nasty neighbor. Maybe she was just a plain old nasty neighbor. There are nasty people in the world, right? It's possible. But let's assume, for argument's sake, this is just to kind of enrich our way of thinking about the Gemara, about the Agadita. What might have led her to be quite so nasty? I mean, that's a really, really nasty thing to do. It's like proactively nasty. It's not just like, you know, when the ladies are, you know, getting water or doing the wash, they talk about, you know, the wife of Chanina Mendoza, oh, the faker with the smoke and the whole thing. And she actually proactively goes over to in effect, force her to confront her shame. It's a really, really nasty thing to do. So my question to you is she just plain old nasty? Or is there some other dynamic here which has elicited this nastiness? Mardukhai, yes? Yeah, you all hear the question? I think it's a fair question, isn't it? Yes?
It might be similar to how Leah behaved towards Rachel, being mean to her so that she would daven. But here I think the possibly to tell her to do something about her situation and tell her, listen, you're poor, you know, you should do something about that.
So her goal is to reform her so that she could actually get her husband to do some nisim. The Gemara characterizes her as nasty. Mm-hmm. So we need to take that as the basis, that she's nasty. Mm-hmm. The question is, and I'm asking you, is where does the nastiness come from? Does it come from just sheer nastiness? Which, by the way, this is really nasty. This is like, you know, lifnim asher is adin nasty. Not just, as I say, not lashon hara nasty. Or does it come, is it... What I'm asking you to do, really, hang on a second, is think about this in your own lives and see if you could figure out from experiences that you may have had why somebody would do such a nasty thing. Like, think about it. You with me? You hear what I'm pushing you in a direction. I'd like you to think about what elicits such nastiness. Yes?
Could it come from jealousy?
Very good. Very good. Very good. You know, she's thinking, this neighbor, Chanina Mendoza, Sadik, Eshes Sadik, maybe she's thinking, you know, maybe my life should be a little different. look at the life these people lead. But that's not the life she leads, right? She's like cooking her chalent. Maybe she should cook a little less chalent or a little less challah. Look at these models of tzidkus. And so maybe she's feeling a little guilty about her own life. And maybe to expiate her guilt, she needs to knock them down a pedestal. You see this all the time, not all the time. This is a phenomenon where there are, you know, you go to work in the world, Mirch Shem, you'll probably all go to work out there in the world at some point, so you'll be in the Chantem, but if you leave from world, and you will have bosses. Some bosses will be Jewish, and some bosses will be non-Jewish. Generally, the word in the street is that you're often, not always, this is obviously a stereotypical generalization, but take it for what it's worth, it's better to have a guy as a boss than a Jew as a boss, who's not from. Shabbos, Yontif, why is that?
It's more respect.
More respect, why? Because if you're a firm person, and you're leading a firm life, and your boss is Jewish, but he's not leading the kind of firm life you lead, he's got to knock you off your pedestal. He's got to expiate his own guilt and not living the fullness of the Jewish life that you embody. And so he's got to like make it harder for you. Because otherwise, you know, why aren't I doing that? Look, here, so he's a lawyer, accountant, doctor. I'm a lawyer, accountant, doctor. And he's still from, and here I am, not from. He's got to pay a price for that to justify his own failures in that regard. You've heard that, right? I assume you've heard that? Yes? No? Okay. I think that's one way of reading the neighbor of Rav Chanina ben Dosa, that she felt guilty and needed to expiate her guilt, and therefore proactively and nastily sought to knock Chanina ben Dosa's wife off her pedestal. You are no better than I. In fact, you're worse, because you're a faker and I'm not. Okay? All right. I don't think we're going to finish the Agadah today, but I want to, you know, I know you have to get to morning Seder, but I just want to finish commenting. Maybe we'll finish. Is that okay with you? Should I rush through the rest of it? I don't think that. What do you think? Are you okay with coming back and finishing it like in a week or two? Is that okay? You don't mind the break? I think, because otherwise I'll have to rush through the whole thing.
It's going to be hard to sleep tonight.
Take it with you and learn it. But I want to just conclude commenting on this portion of it. She escapes into an inner chamber. So, literally, of course, she goes, she doesn't want to confront the neighbor. But I would like to suggest to you, and I generally believe that these akkaditas, if you've been to my shiurim in the past, are very profound, and they have multiple layers of meaning. So the pshat layer of meaning is that she escaped, because she didn't want to confront the neighbor. But I would also like to suggest a deeper meaning. You see where I'm going? Go ahead. Go here. What's that? Whoa, very good. She escapes into herself because we all have inner chambers. Think about this. I would argue that she feels ashamed at being ashamed. Why is she ashamed? She believes in the tzidkus of Chanina ben Dosa. She believes that you really shouldn't need more than a kav charuvin. And yet she experiences herself as being ashamed. Wouldn't she be ashamed at being ashamed? And I think that what she wanted to do was to escape her shame into some inner chamber of herself, and she's thinking, I'm a hypocrite. I'm a hypocrite. Why do I feel ashamed? If I truly believed in the kolel life, if I truly believed in this kind of a life, then why would I be ashamed? And so there is what could be called a meta-shame. Shame over shame. And the shame over shame is the most painful shame of all. Because she is cognizant of the cognitive dissonance in which she lives. This is an example of cognitive dissonance in psychology. Right? There's this like beliefs, and you're living a life one way, you have beliefs the other way, there's a dissonance. And she has now, her neighbor is forcing her to confront her own failures. She always did it, okay, you know. She wasn't conscious of this as a challenge. But now that the neighbor comes pounding on the door, she needs to escape. She's thinking, I'm a hypocrite. I feel shame over the shame I feel. I should never feel any shame. And this, I will argue, becomes a pivotal, crucial stage in her evolution from being Debisu, the wife of Janina Mendoza, into a more developed persona, but in ways that are truly fascinating. And we finally, as the Agadita unfolds, we will enter into the relationship between Janina Mendoza, this incredible tzaddik, and his wife. Because first we had the introduction, Bas Kol, the whole world is Rav Janina Mendoza. Then we forget about him. He's not a part of the Agadita. The Agadita focuses on his wife. Now what happens when the two talk? And how does that relationship evolve? And how do they work it out? Really big question. So stay tuned for next time. No.